Eat shit and die, Ricky!
Eat shit and live, Bill.
People's eyes are gonna pop out of their damn skulls when they see this.
Listen, you little bitch. You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish.
Finger licking good.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks podcast. I'm your host, Tim Trashmouth Mills, and today's episode sees the return of the one and only Scott Mellinger of the bands Zayo, Pack, and Lonely Ghost Parade. Now, before we dive into this week's episode, I just want to remind you guys to go follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and X for all updates on the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by sharing it around or rating and subscribing wherever you're listening. Or if you'd like to sign up for the Patreon, it is only $2 a month. The link for that is in the description. You'll get some stickers in the mail, a shout-out on a future episode, and a couple other perks as well, so check that out if you're interested. Thank you guys again so much for listening, and let's get into this week's episode. We can dive right in. We can start with the the music side of things. Of course, you play in Zayo, which is, you know, it was nice to hang out at the show, man. You guys
killed it, yeah,
for sure. But
I'm so glad you came.
Oh, yeah, dude, for sure. It was nice. Like I told you, it was probably the biggest show I've seen in that venue, for sure, because it's like a not a smaller venue, it's just it doesn't get a lot of like big, you know, nice shows and stuff like that. And usually when it does, it's just it's usually a bad night or they don't like get a good lineup to like support the like headliner and stuff. And I think it was just a combination of all those good things, and it just turned out to be a really good like full house, you know what I mean, as far as like,
yeah, dude, I don't understand. I mean, because when we started, I mean, that was kind of it was shows like that. I mean, that was even a little bit better than what we had sometimes. So yeah. I'm always surprised to see how weird it is to like have shows in like, you know, 200 cap rooms, but like those are the ones you can fill up and it's fun and it's just like all the energy's there.
It was
a good time.
Now, they had good shows like a decade ago, but it like really died out quick. And like I said, over time, it's like it's got a few things here or there. But I mean, of course, everything's struggled to come back from, you know, post pandemic and stuff. But
that's really it.
No, pretty much, you know, of course you play, you don't just play in that band. You got a couple projects. And then of course, you also do, the Observer recordings. What's it called again? I'm sorry.
Observed Observer.
That's right. Observed Observer. Do you want to shout out any of that stuff or do you have anything coming up with any of that? This, will drop second week of May. You were going to be my first guest, but I'm having somebody on that's, putting together the Carolina Fear Fest at the end of May. So I'm going to they'll be like the first, you know, the first guest, so that way it could have a little separation to promote the.
Oh, I like it. I love it. Yeah, dude, I mean, I played so much different stuff and I like so much different stuff. So I play in a band called Pack that it's like female fronted, sort of like a little more pop rock, but like if Smashing Pumpkins and I don't know, well, it's sort of like that kind of thing, like still rock, but like definitely a little happier, not as dark as what I normally play. So I do that. I have done, me and Dan still are together with it, but there was a band that we started in like 2007 or 8 called Lonely Ghost Parade.
Yeah.
It's like more like doomy sort of post metal type of stuff. Not really like screamy as much, but like real depressing kind of stuff. We've done that forever. Our friend Steve and Matt played with us for a while. And then it kind of just, once they started taking, you know, getting busier, we put it to the back burner a little bit.
Yeah.
And, but now like Jeff is actually going to do some drum recording for me. So it's more or less going to be like kind of a project. I mean, I'd love to play out with it, and so we'll see how that works. But like, it's probably going to be a recording project at first, just to get it moving again. Because I wrote so many songs for it, and we played so many songs for it. So I just want to get a record out from it because I really enjoy the music so much. Okay. But we'll see if it goes cool. Like we try to play, and then yeah, like when we decided with Zayo coming back in, really kind of started in 2009. So like. In 2015 or whatever it was that that Well-Intentioned Virus came out, me and Jeff went back and forth about, should we send this to labels or what do we want to do with this? So we submitted to a couple different labels. Everybody liked the record, but the way the music industry was changing at that point was like, we like the record, but one, we do need touring. Like, you guys have to be out on the road as much as we can get you out on the road. And two, the deal started to turn into these 360 deals that people talk about all the time. So that's all we were able to like get was, we're going to not only have to be on tour a lot, but we're also going to have to like give them a percentage of everything we do, including merch, everything. Like, they would get a percentage of all of it. And me and Jeff were like, okay, you know, not that that's a terrible deal for people. And what you get from a good label, if it's run right and good people, is invaluable. So I get it. You know, we totally understand that whole thing.
Yeah.
But we were also at the point where like, look, we kind of know what type of band we are. We know what we want to sound like. People that follow us know what we're doing. We spent years and years and years, you know, battling, trying to gain more fans, doing the whole bullshit of what all bands do. And we were like, we got to a point with our career that we felt that we had enough of a like underground support, like enough support from just who we like, just but with us. Yeah. I guess that's a good way to, I don't know how to, but we felt like we had enough support from fans that we could just do it ourselves. So Jeff and I pretty much discussed just doing our own label. What ends up happening though is Jeff kind of basically does most of all the work for it, because he, you know, he was the guy that funded the first recordings. We would like, you know, we would sell, like, we did a recording, like a 7-inch recording, and that helped fund some of the things that came after it. But you know, a lot of it too was like, we had that funding, but Jeff also was able to fund some stuff through credit and through all that kind of stuff. So we were able to build up a situation where we were able to put out our own stuff. We knew all the people that we would probably have had labels talk to anyway. I mean, for all the years that we were a band. And that's the one thing about it. Like, for me, once things changed to the point where like I was a little more out front with things, and like I did a lot of the business for the band before, like right before Jeff joined, I made it like my whole goal was like, no matter what we do with whoever we go with, they have to be people that we can have a relationship with. Yeah. So I can keep those relationships after whatever happens. Cause you have to think about this all the time. Like, okay, so if Zayo breaks up or if Zayo's done, I want to have relationships with the label heads. I want to have relationships with the people that, you know, the magazine or whatever print there is even left, or like the online stuff, or like, you know, we would talk to every single person that ever had any interest or would want to talk to us. Like, anybody that was, you know, small, that like wanted to do a, like it had a zine and it, they wanted to do an interview, we would talk to everybody, because we're nobody. Like, I'm happy to talk to whoever wants to talk to us. So all those relationships were key in doing what we do now, because now we have some of those people that we talk to that weren't anybody are people now in higher places, and we have those friendships, or we had friendships from places that were already there and established, and we have those friendships. So we basically just saw that we could really do this on our own. Yes, it's a lot more work. It's also way more rewarding. It's way better in what we're able to get and what we're able to do with it. We feel more like artistically completed. Like, I feel we're like, our hands are in every aspect of it, even down to the minutiae. Like, so we just put out this Live from the Church recording.
Yeah.
And, you know, every one of the records we've put out, like, we decide what's going to be on the cover. Nobody else tells us what to do. Nobody tells us how to do anything. We all the decisions are made by us. So we're never like, oh, I wish that was a little different. It's like all on us. And like I was saying, the Live from the Church recording, like, we, everything's just in our hands. So Saturday, I'm going to get the shipment of all of our vinyl. And then next week, Jeff and Dan and Marty and Ross, like, we're all going to get together and we're going to, or whoever can come, but we're going to box up the orders, and we're going to ship the orders out. It's so much fun to do that kind of stuff. Like, you feel, especially when you're, I guess anybody that has like a business that they work for themselves, like the reward of success and what you deem is success. You know, to me, the success is that we can even do it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so the label was kind of started from not necessity, but we're just like, we don't want to have to do all this other stuff. We can't tour a ton, but we want to play as much as we can. How can we do this where like, we can make most of the rules. And that was the way. You got to just do it yourself. And honestly, that's the, I think what's cool about our whole situation is, and I hate using the term fan base because Tim, you know, like I don't, whatever, dude, people are just our friends. Like, I don't care. Like, I can't even tell you how many people that like started out as like, oh man, I'd love to see your band. And then now I just talk to them. And like this, my friend, John Robinson, actually came to the show that you were at. He was a fan of the band, and I just saw him at like three sequential shows, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, and then he'd like flew to like Philly. I'm like, what are you? You're spending too much money. So I'm like, from now on, call, let me know if you're going to come. And I'm just, you're like all time guest list, buddy. Like, I like it's crazy. So, but yeah, the, like those people that support us. I mean, you're really, when you buy a record or you do anything for Bandcamp, like it's little, like you're keeping this whole machine, this train running. So. If it wasn't for all that, like it's, this is over. And man, the appreciation, I don't think people will ever really understand. Like, I know artists are always like, oh, we appreciate all of it. Like, dude, like every little thing, even people that you just pay attention and listen to a song and buy a shirt, like it's huge. It's so huge.
Hell yeah. No, and I definitely know what you mean. Like, you guys, you know, the whole time at the show that, you know, we hung out at, you guys were just hanging out at the bar the whole time, you know, you know, being approached by people, you know, walking around talking to people, you know, just going through the venue, watching some of the bands. And you know, there's a lot of shows that I've been to at, you know, venues about the same size, you know, or, you know, just, you know, smaller venues where there's plenty of places just to hang out at the bar. But instead, some of those bands just hide until it's time for them to play. You know, and it's just like, so I definitely see what you mean. It's like, it's one thing to call, like, it's fine to call people, you know, to say they're a fan base, because, you know, there's not really many other words for it, you know.
True. Yeah.
Not any nicer words, at least, you know. So, so like, it's just all about how you treat that fan base, you know what I mean? As long as you don't treat them like fan, you know, like fans or whatever.
Exactly.
With quotes or whatever. But no, and I definitely agree. Like, it makes more sense. Like, those 360 deals, like you said, aren't horrible for people that need to build a fan base. But you guys just kind of needed to remind your fan base that you were there at that point.
That's it.
And it was just kind of like, and your fan base was older and had more disposable income. So it was like, hey, you know, like instead of letting somebody middleman that shit. And like you said, you get under contracts, you get stuck on tour for 360 days of the year. It's just not worth it sometimes to be under a label that's just going to, you know, beat you to death, put you in, you know, shows that they know won't pull. But, you know, as long as you're, you know, pushing the record they want you to push or whatever, or hitting the dates they want you to hit. It's just, I don't know, stuff like that. That sucks. But. Hell yeah. I'm glad that you got, you know, and especially like that's one thing is like the way that a lot of people like records like to, which I guess management does it too. But, you know, when people book tours, a lot of times they go in 95. So like Chesapeake, where I saw you, get skipped a lot, you know, by. So it's like it was nice, you know, that you guys are, you know, book stuff on your own sometimes and are willing to come out of the way and go to, you know, places like that, which other bands do, you know, like in the hardcore world, Brace War just played like right up the road from where you guys played, like at the end of the month or whatever last month.
Oh, that's cool.
So there's definitely like plenty of shows and stuff, and bands do definitely still come through, like especially over at the Norva. Like the next night after I went and saw y'all, I saw Gore at the Norva. So they definitely still come through, even though they're from Richmond. You think they just stay in Richmond, but
yeah, that actually is funny because we played the Norva a couple times, and it was years ago, and we met. Was it Beefcake? I think.
Yeah.
He was at that show, and I got to meet him. So that's my Gore story. I got to meet Beefcake the Mighty. But dude. I mean, we do. That is the one thing that we have somebody to help us do is the booking, because booking, you definitely want to have somebody that has a good relationship with promoters, somebody that like has been around, understands that whole world. Because what we do is like, you know, Jeff will come up with an itinerary, say, like, we're like, hey, we have 2 weeks. So we haven't hit, which was what we're going to do in July that we just announced. So we haven't hit South, like Florida, Texas. We haven't hit those places. So we have 2 weeks. Here is my rough outline of where we'd like to play. So like, it makes sense. Where can we start out at that doesn't have a crazy drive? Because, dude, I'm going to tell you another thing, too. Being in a band for as long as we were, and I know you make the sacrifices. We don't make a ton of money doing this, like, and that's fine because it's really it's not supposed to be about that, but that extra finance is really helpful. Yeah. But I can't tell you how many times we had friends, or even with our own situations, where when you have 14-hour drives for shows and then people are driving overnight, nothing ever good happens overnight.
Yeah.
Unless you are in a bus with a driver that can drive you overnight, or if you're in, you know, you're doing a tour where there's somebody that's like sleeps and then they can drive overnight. The overnight drives are just not safe. And we've eliminated them. What yeah. we do now is we're going to drive a little bit after the show. We're going to sleep, and then we're going to get up early and we're going to get the show. Like, we're not going to do overnight drives. So we kind of give ourselves enough span of time to get to the shows when we need to be there. So we don't do overnight drives. So we'll plan out, like, here's what all works. Here's a routing that works. And then Daniel DeFonce, the guy that does our booking, he'll take that, go to the promoters he can go through, and then we'll basically have whatever be confirmed and be booked. So he's integral to this whole game, because the booking agent is super important to this whole thing.
Yeah.
And he's been awesome since I think we started working with him 3-4 years ago. We first started, like, when we came back, we had a guy named Andy Rice that was doing our booking, which Andy's one of my favorite dudes of all time. And he just decided to step away from doing that work. But yeah. He's the one that got us in contact with Daniel. So, but it's been great. And we love Daniel. He does such a good job. And we try to make his job a little easier too. Cause, like, look, we're not going out 5 months out of the year. So he's not, you know, we're not like one of his bigger acts, and we're not one of the ones that play a lot, but we want to make sure, like, hey, all we want to make it easy. We'll tell you where we want to go. We're super easygoing dudes. So most of the time, here's what he can get. Here's what the promoters, a lot of the promoters we end up knowing too, which is awesome. But so it's like, yeah, we try, like, everything we do, man, we just try to have a family around us. Like, Daniel's like a brother in this whole thing. Our, you know, our shirt company is like one of my, I love the guy that runs our shirt company. Everything, like all that stuff. Like, we even just now for this live from the church, we started working with a new pressing plant that just opened up in Pittsburgh, like real close to all of us. This guy named Jeff Betton, he started a company or a pressing plant called Hellbender. And they're local, which is kick ass for us, because we love the whole Pittsburgh thing. And so far, he's like, they've just gone above and beyond what we would have ever thought. I mean, the turnaround times for the vinyl there is just unbelievable. Gorgeous, gorgeous vinyl. Everything about it has been great. And dude, those dudes are just going to U-Haul it to my house on Saturday. it's awesome.
No, that's super cool. Especially, like, you said, it's vinyl is already something that's hard to, you know, come by and, like, worry mm-hmm. about backups and this and that at the plant. So to not only find a new place that, you know, isn't already stuffed full of clients, as well as they're local, you could support somebody, you know, local. Yep. Like you said, you guys, you know, like to, you know, support Pittsburgh as much as possible. Yep. So yep. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. We were so goddamn stoked that they opened up that plant, because it is like, there's not a ton of different vinyl plants. I mean, you have like some of the big guys, and those are the guys that are backed up 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
And then there's like some smaller places, but even the small places, you know, some of them are limited in what they can do. And Hellbender's able to do everything we have been wanting to do. And their turnaround time's insane. So yeah, pretty awesome.
No, that's super sick. I didn't pick up the Live from the Church record, but I might try to hit.
Don't get it. I'll just send you one.
Oh, you don't have to do that, man. I might try to make it out to that Raleigh show. I think you guys are playing Raleigh on the thing, so I might try to make it out for that, depending on...
That's right. Yeah, please let me know if you're going to be able to, because we'll hang out again.
No, it definitely depends on just as long as it's not already on top of like something else that I have like planned or whatever, because, you know, taking time off of work, I'll definitely make the trip.
Oh, yeah.
It's only 2.5 hours for me, so... But
it's still pretty... Oh, man, that's a long drive, though. That's still a long drive for just going to a show.
Right. But now, like I said, I'm kind of used to it just because of the, you know, like I said, a lot of people don't come through Chesapeake as much. You know, like, there's a show here and there, definitely, you know, it's not barren, but, you know, it takes a while. But but I'll hit you up once I know for sure if I'm coming down.
Yeah, please do. Please.
But we can kind of segue into the horror movies. You know,
yes,
this is your second time on the show, so of course, I want to know what some of your favorite horror movie sequels are. And of course, you know, they don't have to be just sequel as a number two. They could be, you know, like part seven, part five, stuff like that. So,
I like this. Okay, so sequels. What would be okay? One that comes to mind real quick is The Exorcist 3. I loved The Exorcist 3.
Oh, yeah.
I know it got shit on. Everything gets shit on, whatever. I didn't really like the Heretic too much, but there were some aspects of 3 that I loved.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, so that was definitely one of my top ones of like a sequel or whatever. Let me think. What? I mean, dude, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is pretty badass.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really, honestly, Nightmare, I don't think I checked out on Nightmare until maybe New Nightmare. Like, I was still pretty in until, and even that's not bad. It's still like a cool idea. Wes Craven, I mean, I'm going to watch anything Wes Craven did when he was around. Let's see, what else is a good sequel? Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead's a sequel to Night of the Living Dead, right?
Yeah, hell yeah. Now, a lot of people don't think about those as like in-universe sequels, the ones that are like, you know, like just in the same universe and stuff like that. Like, that's what's funny is like a lot of things don't take that and run with it. But, you know, like for instance, The Purge, you know, they have like a character sometimes carry out, but they kind of took that idea and, you know, ran with it too. And,
yeah, they did. Yep.
They didn't do it as good at all. Like, none of the Purge films were really that good, but I'm just, it's nice to see what, like 28 Days Later did it, you know, pretty well with 28 Weeks, where it's kind of like just in-universe, you know.
Are they? Is that confirmed that they're doing a new one?
It's confirmed, and I know Alex Garland's writing it and Danny Boyle's directing. But so far, Cillian Murphy's only confirmed to produce it. But they're saying there's a chance he's going to star in it again. So that'd be pretty cool.
I hope. I love everything that Cillian's ever in. But yeah, I would love to see them do a third one.
Yeah.
What else would be good? I mean, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. I know I'm going to like forget one of my favorite ones probably.
While you think of some, I do want to comment on Exorcist 3. One thing I love about that is just the fact that, you know, George C. Scott and like Brad Dourif, like the first movie has such a good cast with, you know, Linda Blair, you know, even though, you know, she was a nobody at the time, but she just does so good. And then Ellen Burstyn, you got Max von Sydow and all that stuff. So it was already that had such a stacked cast. Everybody did so great. William Friedkin was known as like this prestigious director. So to come in and finally get like another prestigious guy in George C. Scott, get like a really good actor in Brad Dourif, and if I'm not mistaken, Peter Blatty directed that as well. So to have it all come back around like the strength of the first one, it just I agree, those performances really elevate that film, and it's got some scares in it that rival the first film, you know, with
I agree,
flippers, and then the
dude that
old lady
the old lady on the seat, like that's the thing about like the and I still like The Exorcist. I sort of check out on the like demonic possession shit because I just don't give a shit about that. It just never did anything for me. Like I'm like a creature feature guy. I love monster movies, but I like a lot of the movies that are like more kind of like in real world type of shit. That's, you know, like the things that can happen or whatever, which is why I tend to start watch documentaries more, because I think that's almost a little more terrifying. I think we talked about that last time. But there's something about The Exorcist that just works, like what it is and how it's done, and regardless of any of that, it's still done in a really terrifying way, and it feels so visceral. I just feel like the first one was done, I mean, just for the plain fact of they were able to do what they did in that movie in the 70s. I don't know how people handled, like, I mean, you heard all this, like, obviously the stories of people passing out and stuff, but man, to be able to pull that off in the 70s.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, I think about that though. And then like, think about what Wes Craven did in the 70s. Russ House on the Left. You couldn't make a movie like that now. That movie's like, well, I mean, they sort of do, but not, that's like, it's so over the top with so much of the stuff that happens in it. So
yeah, I think there's a difference with that, and why we don't get like as much like talk about like the theater reactions with that one is because of the I think the difference of where it played. Like, I think What's It Called went to cinemas, where What's It Called What's It Called both times, it doesn't make sense. I think The Exorcist went to actual cinemas, to where
Last House on the Left
and Nice Bed on Your Grave type movies were
yeah
for the grindhouse like, drive-ins and stuff. Yeah, so
Oh, dude, I just had a good sequel. Oh, why did I miss it? Oh, no. Aliens.
Fuck yeah, one of the best sequels of all time.
Of all time, yeah. Like, I am... Here's another thing that drives me crazy about just stupidity of people that watch movies. I love all of that first Ridley Scott Alien is top. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah.
But I love everything. So Alien was it? I think it's Alien Resurrection was the one that seems to people really hate Resurrection.
Yeah.
And I understand, but at the same time, the director of Alien Resurrections was one of my favorite French directors. The guy that did City of Lost Children, Amelie. What else did he do? Delicatessen, like, so all that, and those, all the actors that are in like those movies are in Alien Resurrection. So it's kind of like, if you enjoy that guy's stuff, like, did you ever see Micmax? Like, Micmax is an awesome movie. So yeah. I loved what he did with that whole thing. Like, and I love Prometheus. I really was excited to see where they were going to go with that. And then I feel like Covenant was done in a way to like appease the people that were mad about Prometheus. But what do you like? I wanted them to go to where the engineers were. Like, I was so mad that everything got changed and like, oh, but yeah. So, but Aliens, kick ass sequel. Loved it.
No, hell yeah. Those first four have such great directors behind them. You know, yep. The first one, Ridley Scott, then you got James Cameron, then you got mm-hmm. David Fincher, and then, like you said, the French guy that does
it. I think it's Jean, is it Jean-Pierre Jeunet or Jean something Jeunet? I can't remember. I think it's Jean-Pierre Jeunet. Yeah, I think that's him. I love all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What else is a good sequel? God damn. Terrifier 2 is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically, it's just all this. I mean, those movies, I like how they don't need to be. They up the ante a little bit. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, first one, holy shit. Second one, whoa. Third one, I'm hearing craziness. So
yeah,
I'm excited. It's a slasher. Just make it brutal. Is there anything else that was really awesome? Sequels in horror. Well, here, what are some of yours? So maybe that'll prompt me to think.
Well, I mean, some of my favorite sequels are, you know, of course, I enjoy Halloween 3 is one of my favorites, even though it's technically not it's a sequel, like a sequel by name only, pretty much.
Thing. I'll kill every human being about that. To me, like, that's Carpenter's original intent. That was Carpenter's original intent. The second Halloween shouldn't have even existed, really, from what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I understand why they did it. But yeah, Halloween 3 is badass. And people, like, it makes me so mad because it is. It's awesome. And that's what he wanted to do originally. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I think my other favorite sequel of all time is Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Yep. That's probably a good one
of my favorites. And of course, I love Army of Darkness and Evil Dead 2.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Stuff like that. But, and then the Devil's Rejects is a great sequel to, you know, mm-hmm. House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
I love Scream 4 out of the Scream.
I didn't see Scream 4.
I actually really like it just because I feel like it did a good job of, like, because Scream 3 came out late 90s and then kind of bombed. Yeah. So Scream mm-hmm. 4 didn't come out until like 2010 or 20, I think it was 2011.
Yeah. Okay. It, yeah. I didn't see that.
And it did a good job of, like, by that time, you know, horror had changed so much and was like popular for different reasons, like found footage and remakes and this. So they like did a good job of commenting on what was popular in horror at the time, kind of like the first movie did. But
okay. There was
different things popular, so it didn't feel like a rehash. To where this recent two sequels, the first one was pretty decent. Some people like 6, I didn't prefer it, but 5 like really just felt like they were trying to go back to the first movie and rehash the same stuff from the first one, kind of like while poking fun at movies like Halloween 2018 and stuff like that. So
I see. What did you think of all those? The newest, what's the Gordon? Is it David Gordon Green? Is that the director of those? What do you think of those newest iterations of Halloween?
So for me, 2018 was one that I didn't like it as much as everybody else did. Like, a lot of people like really loved it when it came out, but I was like, it's good enough. But then when they announced that it was a trilogy, I was like, oh, I mean, that's kind of cool. But, you know, at the same time, I liked how it ended, you know, ambiguous with like him like in the green building, but you still heard the breath and whatnot. Yep. And then the night I watched Kills, I watched it like on a call because I was working at the theater still. So I watched Kills like at midnight, and we started 2018 at like 10. So we had like a 20-minute intermission, but we watched like a double feature in there. And I snuck like a cooler because I was the manager doing it. So I like brought a cooler nice. Beer for me and stuff. I just didn't let any of the kids have any. So I was back there like getting drunk watching two movies back to back. So I like had a blast watching Kills the first time, but then revisiting it after seeing all the fucking like memes about Evil Dead's the Night, it really is hard to enjoy that movie. I like the kills are fun, but like all the stuff in between is so like it's just such a bummer. And then I really didn't like Ends.
Oh, I hated Ends.
I watched it like the night it dropped on Peacock because I didn't. They put it up on Peacock randomly on that Thursday night because you thought it was gonna be Friday, and that the only people that would see it Thursday were like theater people. And I was like, I don't really want to go to the theater to see it because, like I said, Kills kind of fell off for me after rewatching.
Yeah.
And so like once it popped up, I was home alone that night, and I think. Like my baby was newborn at the time. So like he was like went to sleep super early. And once he was asleep, I put it on and I was like, I just remember like spending half the movie just going, what the fuck? What the fuck?
Yep.
What?
Dude.
Wait, what? Ned? What?
Yep.
What the fuck?
You could have easily. I'm with you. Like 2018 Halloween was like, it was watchable. And I can watch that one and like be okay. Yep. Not hate it. Not love it. It's just, but it's okay. And then Kills. What like you could have just made Kills and Ends in one thing.
Yeah.
But not that I'm gonna like it, because I still think both of them aren't good. But I think it was so unnecessary to do that third one. And the story just wasn't. I was so mad. Like the whole goddamn point of these movies. I think we talked about this even before on the last podcast, but like what makes Carpenter's Halloween so good? And what makes Wes Craven's Nightmare on Elm Street so good? And what makes Friday the 13th? You don't have to answer everything.
Yeah.
We don't have to know what Michael Myers is. He doesn't have to be a person that you have to kill. He doesn't have to be anything. Like all the movies that we like grew up, like Phantasm.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't need to know. Like you get sort of it's the unknown that makes those movies so cool. Like I don't want answers to every aspect of everything that's there.
Yeah.
And I love that ambiguity. I thought 2018, like you have the fire and then you don't know what happens. Like you could have literally just done that and I would have been happier. Like that could have been the end.
Cause then if you ever want to carry on with the character of Michael Myers without Laurie, you can do it years later. And it's just like, oh, he got out of the fire. He's a little burnt up and now he's killing a new group of kids or whatever. But, which I think would have been the better way to continue after 2018, would have just had him go on to a new group. Like, you know, Haddonfield is still his home, but, you know, like kind of like the Elm Street movies where some people move into Elm Street and that's shit luck for them, but now they got to do it.
Exactly. That's totally right. And it's weird to me that people like these, like when they make the movies now, I don't know if it's like a studio decision or if it's like the directors come in with these ideas, but I just don't, you would think like these guys, because I remember reading about the new Halloweens and how like Danny McBride was involved in the writing of it, which is cool because he was involved in some of the Prometheus stuff because they did Alien and he was in that.
Yeah.
And it's just like those guys grew up on the same movies as us. Why don't they understand that like that mystery, like, you know, that hidden thing that makes it like scarier, like that, you know, I don't need an answer. Like I feel like that's what I love, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's no nothing. You just kids go, oh shit, you got Leatherface. I don't want to feel bad for Leatherface because he's missing his nose. Why would you do that to me? Like how stupid they did with that. And like even when they did the Netflix one, where like they present these characters not in the way like I don't want to know. I want to. Here's Leatherface's entrance. Open the door, grabs the girl. I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Love it. That's how you do it.
Yeah, instead of it being like, oh, they killed his new adoptive mother, so he's going on a revenge rampage. And all these kids are unbearable, so you want them all to get murdered. Where in the first one, it's like, the kids are likable. They're not doing anything wrong. They're checking on their grandfather's grave. Like,
that's all.
They lose the spirit of those films for sure.
You are right. And I think that's another thing too, is like, it's the secondary characters have become just the kill when the kill doesn't mean anything. If you don't have something for a character that you care about, like I don't have to like love all of it, but like you want to have some endearing quality of like, I don't want that person to die. Oh shit, they just got a chainsaw to the face. Like, that makes that even more intense. I think with Stranger Things they did that pretty well. Not that I have been totally in love with like everything Stranger Things kind of has done, but like those characters and the actors themselves do such a good job that you actually do care about them.
Yeah.
You know, so like when all the craziness happens, like, oh man, you kind of like that, like part of your brain that has that empathy for those people, like you have it. But like, yeah, I don't have empathy for half of the like people that Halloween 2018 killed. I don't care.
Yeah. And I know people listening might try to make the argument that like, oh, that's what slashers are for. You're not supposed to like the characters. But to me, I feel like there's certain, like, I feel like within the first few films, a lot of things establish if you're supposed to like these characters or not. And I feel like Halloween is one where you're supposed to like the characters. Like, it's very, I mean, it's made a, you know, very big point early on that you're supposed to like Laurie and her friends. You know, they're just normal teens and they're not being annoying or anything like that. And then the next film, she's like in the hospital and it's really just the cops really trying to save her and stuff. So there's really nobody that's unlikable. And the same thing with, I can't remember the other one that we were talking about, but pretty much, you know, to jump over to Friday the 13th, you know, you're supposed to not like those guys, you know, so that's a franchise where if they're all unlikable, it makes sense. Or hostile, you know, if you want to kill all of them off, you know, then who cares? But
that's a good plot point too, that I guess maybe comes, I didn't explain, because I think you just made a good point that I either want to have characters that I don't want to die, or I want to have characters that I can't wait to see them die.
Yeah.
But there's still, but it's sort of the same, like it's like just two sides of the sword. Like, I don't want it to be, I guess, I like what you just said, because it's like set up, like you just, like in Friday the 13th, like you're not supposed to like the counselors, they're jerks, and the kids are like mean, and you know, whatever, they pick on people. So like, you, I guess, identify with Jason more with those kind of movies.
They're like extra obnoxious, and then of course, like you, like they're like killing, they like kill the snake, and they're like being like kind of pick on one of the teens in most of the movies.
Yep.
The other one we're talking about was Texas Chainsaw. It's the same thing with those first two films. You don't want Sally and all them to die.
I mean,
most people want Franklin to die because he's annoying.
Yeah, of course.
And then in the second film, nobody wants, like, Stretch is one of people's, you know, favorite final girls. You know, and then of course everybody loves Lefty. You know, with Dennis Hopper. Mm-hmm. So. You don't want them to die either. So it's one of those that, again, that's a franchise that established these characters you don't want to die. And they kind of did it right with that remake with, of course, like you said, they showed his face, which was a little bit too much, but at least the characters weren't like all unbearable, except for like one character, which was kind of a callback to Franklin. You know, the one guy that's just like, fuck the hitchhiker, you know, let's get going.
Or Yeah.
The one gets like busted in the face.
Yep.
But then, of course, it just fell off once they got to like doing Leatherface, the movie where they're just like killing people on the road randomly. When, again, it was all like in the first film, they killed people because they came into their house. And in the second film, they, you know, which of course they'd obviously been killing people because there were skulls and shit around. But
yeah,
they were probably, you know, wanderers or people that, you know, took from their family, you know. Mm-hmm. And then in the second film, they only came after Lefty and them because of, or you know, stretching them because she was playing their stuff on the radio, which I guess they were killing those two teens in the beginning, but those teens were obnoxious and annoying as fuck. You wanted them die, so it was they were killing the right people, and then they were only going out after the wrong people when they had to. So no, it's just I'm with you. It's one or the other for me, and I feel like some franchises I go in expecting to want characters to live, and then sometimes, like, I'm with you, Stranger Things doesn't get everything right, but I don't, like, people always make the comment that they wish they'd kill more people, and I'm like, I can't think of anybody I want to die, so not really.
I kind of like how they're doing it, and I like that there's actually something there. You want those kids to succeed, and you, I mean, that's the other thing too. I don't know if we'll ever get a movie, we probably have, actually, that I'm not even thinking of, but like, sometimes part of me wishes that the bad thing that shouldn't happen, that all audiences are going to reject, happens.
Yeah.
You know, like, sometimes I kind of wish, like, you kill somebody or you do something so insane that, like, even if people don't like it, you do it so it's something different. Yeah. You know, like, what was the movie I was talking, me and my wife were talking about, that I was like so mad because it's, like all the Marvel movies. And this is dumb because it went totally off subject, but We just No Way Home was on the other night, on like last night. And we're like watching it. And, you know, the end of No Way Home, you're like, you actually feel like, oh shit, like they don't know him.
Yeah.
And there's like actually some like emotional relevance there.
Yeah.
Whereas like Infinity War and Endgame and all that shit, like they kill everybody and then they just, oh, okay, well, we can undo the snap and then bring people back. Like, dude, I want there to be finality because like, and I know like Iron Man died, but like you kind of already knew he was going to do that because Robert Downey Jr. was kind of done with the character. I like, dude, killing like Tom Holland's Spider-Man in Infinity War, I was like, yeah, holy shit. You know, and then they, of course, you can't do that because we have to make Black Panther. We have to make Spider-Man, a couple new Spider-Man. Like, I love, do something crazy, which is why I think we talked about like the Ari Aster stuff. Like, dude doesn't play game. Like, he, like, his movies, even, you know, whatever, like, they're, they have like that, that, like, they go places where like, man, I'm surprised he goes there, you know?
Yeah, you don't leave the film happy.
No. And like, we were talking, like, a couple of my buddies last night, we were talking about like Hereditary and Midsommar and the movie, I always forget the name of it, but there's the one, like his first student film that you can just watch for free on YouTube.
Oh yeah. Strange Things About the Johnsons.
Oh dude, that's the most disturbing thing I think that dude's ever done.
Yeah.
That thing is so, that short film is so disturbing.
No, without a doubt, for sure.
But like Hereditary and Midsommar, I love it. And did you see that A24 just released the new longer version of Midsommar?
No, I knew that they did it on Blu-ray. I was hoping that they would release it on streaming because I don't want to buy the $50 Blu-ray.
I know. Yeah, I didn't see it streaming anywhere. I just saw that they put the physical release out, but it's like, you know, gives a little more backstory stuff, and I want to see it so bad. I didn't get to see that version. It makes me mad.
No, same. They put it back out in theaters, like with the director's cut for a few showings, but it was like one weekend, and it was a bad weekend for me. So I didn't make it out to it myself. But I want to see the director's cut. I've heard it's pretty good. I know Travis has seen it. He said, I think he has the Blu-ray with the director's cut. You should just be like, yo, let me borrow that shit. Like,
yo, so I'll come pick it up and then bring it right back. Yeah, I want to see it real bad. I mean, dude, if it was just a little cheaper, maybe I'll find it on like Mercari or something. Some idiot will sell it for $30 and I'll be all right.
Which I will say, their stuff's worth it because they sell like they're usually like these very glorious books and they come with like art books and all this stuff and they're like really cool covers. But I just like, I already have the movie on regular Blu-ray. I don't really feel like I need the extra 30 minutes that bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been trying to like buy some of the Criterion Collection stuff and a lot of that, like, it's the same thing where it's like, it looks really nice. And like, you have the exact director's intent for the movie. And like, I bought Elephant Man, actually Princess Bride. Princess Bride's one of my favorite movies of all time. So I had to have that on Criterion. But the movie's called Devils, right? I think it's Devils. It's the 70s movie that like was banned in the UK.
Yeah, I think it's the same guy that did Possession, if I'm not mistaken.
I think Criterion just released a version of that, like the X-rated version of that or whatever. So yeah, that might that. Be my, yeah, I want to see that really bad too. That might be my next Criterion purchase. But
And that's my thing. That's exactly why I don't buy Midsommar for $50. Cause like I already have it. And I'm like, if I'm going to spend $50 on a Criterion, I'm at least going to buy one I don't already have, or like I haven't seen before, you know, something that's worth the purchase, you know, cause for instance, like I have Eraserhead on Criterion, but it's the like original DVD. And I'd love to have the Blu-ray, but I couldn't like get myself to like upgrade that when there's like, I don't have, like, for instance, I don't have Mulholland Drive on Blu-ray at all. Yeah. So if that was on Criterion, I'd rather buy that. So it's like, that's the thing is like when you try to grow the collection, like I have two copies of some movies and sometimes it's an accident, but sometimes like I bought a cool steelbook of Bone Tomahawk a couple weeks back. And I couldn't remember if I had like it on Blu-ray. So now I have like a regular Blu-ray and a steelbook, which I'll probably just,
that's cool,
like give the Blu-ray, you know, away to somebody some point. But usually I try not to double up because I'm trying to grow the collection in movies, you know, in titles in general, not just, you know, I have three copies of fucking Dracula versus Frankenstein, which I did just buy Dracula versus Frankenstein at the last convention.
Well, dude, there's the vinegar syndrome. I know they do it. I mean, they seem like they're doing it every couple of years, but I think there's a new Universal Monsters box set, like a new 4K Universal Monsters box set that, because I've been holding off because I have the DVD of like their original Universal Monsters box set, like the one that, whatever. or the legacy editions or whatever it is. And I've been like, man, I really want the 4K versions, blah, blah, blah. And then they just released this crazy one. And man, I kind of want to get that. And then they're doing, I have it on DVD, and I have it bought on like Vudu or whatever, but they're that new 4K Crow Steelbook's coming out, which I probably have to get that. Oh, I just, oh, there's too much stuff.
No, I feel that. Walmart just got the new 4K Steelbook for a Creep Show. And
I saw it the other day.
I'm still rocking the paper DVD cover Creep Show.
I have that one.
It's one of my favorite movies. So I'm probably gonna go grab that when I get, you know, paid again, just because I could buy it now, but it was it's $40 for a fucking movie that I already have. I was like, I'll wait until I have a little bit more money in my pocket. But
and dude, honestly, like my TV's like 55 inch and I have an Xbox One X that I play everything through. So like my DVDs don't look terrible. Like I can still watch them and it like up converts them a little bit to the four, like with the 4K thing on the whatever Xbox. And my TV is not so big that like it looks super pixelated.
Yeah.
So no, I can handle my Creep Show box paper case one.
Well, and I think it was streaming on Shudder for a while too. Like I know the show's on Shudder, but the movie was up there too. So I'm like, you know, and they usually put like the most restorated version they could get. Yeah. Or, you know, the most recent restoration they can get. So.
But that's cool. I need Shudder. What's the other? Oh, that night. I think we talked about it when we hung out. It's going to be on Shudder and like.
Oh,
it was just in the theaters.
Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah. Late Night with the Devil. Yeah, I want to see that so bad. Oh, and I think it's going to be streaming on Shudder soon. So I might just have to bite it and get that, dude. There's too much stuff I'd want to watch.
No, I loved it and definitely recommend it. If you end up seeing it and really enjoying it, feel free to send me a little recorded review and I'll paste it into this episode. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully I can see it before then. That'd be awesome.
Which it drops on April 19th, so it'll be on Shudder way before this episode comes out. So.
Oh, sick. Okay. Yeah, I gotta watch that. What else? Did you watch the what's the new Mia Goth trilogy? Is it Maxine? Is that the newest one?
Yeah, the trailer for that?
Yeah, I just watched the trailer for that.
Yeah, that looks fucking excellent.
Yeah, dude, those other two are so good, so I can't imagine that not being awesome. Right.
Speaking of those, is there any like newer horror films that you've seen since we, you know, obviously we probably chatted about a few at the bar and stuff.
We did.
Is there any that, like, since last time you're on the show, you want to shout out?
I watched Infinity Pool. It's kind of not, but it is horror, but it's not totally like... I guess it is. Yeah, it's pretty horror-ish.
Yeah, it's like body horror, high-class horror, what they call it.
I watched that, and I was pretty blown away. I wasn't expecting it to go to where it did. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean, for anybody listening, I don't mean high-class horror as an elevated horror, like that type of shit. I mean, high-class as in high-class people being high-class and doing crazy high-class shit. Wealthy horror, I guess. Yeah,
that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I thought that actually was really good. There was something on, what did I watch? Did you watch that Dream Scenario movie?
No, I actually, so what's funny is that wasn't on, so I was using somebody's HBO Max, and they broke up with my friend.
Oh.
And so, like, we were still using his HBO Max and stuff like that, but then recently none of us have been able to log in anymore.
Away.
They were telling, like, last time I was up there, it was like coming April something, like it was like early April, like April 1st or some shit like that. So I planned to watch it, and I ended up watching that director did another film called Sick of Myself that came out. I think it came out over in the UK because it's like in his home language, which is, I don't want to get it wrong, but I think it's like French or something or Italian. And so it came out over in the UK like back in 2022. But it didn't come out until like January 3rd, literally like the beginning of last year here. And I didn't see it till the beginning of this year when I was like waiting for Dream Scenario to come out. It, I guess because Dream Scenario was coming out, they threw that up on Paramount Plus. And it might still be up there, but it's called Sick of Myself. And that was really good. It was pretty much about this girl who is like, her and her boyfriend are super narcissistic. Like he's an artist, but all his artists is like stolen shit. And like every time they're at parties, they're trying to one up each other. But she goes, she pretty much starts taking this medicine to make herself sick on purpose to like garner attention. So, but definitely check it out. But would you recommend Dream Scenario?
So, yes, but I wasn't ready for where it went. So, like where I thought it was going to go, it like messed me up where it actually ended up going. And then what brought me back to being like, no, I kind of liked it, was the next day I'm like thinking about how, where it went. And it like, it was really cool experience to watch it. Cause it really does like it, like my anxiety was like high watching that movie, just watching what was happening. So yeah. I definitely think it could go either way though. Like cause it's really easy to not like it. It took me the next day to be like thinking about it going, it was one of those type of things where I'm like, that went somewhere that didn't seem like it should have went.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I like that they did that. So like my wife didn't like it, but I'm like, but I kind of like how it turned out. Cause it's pretty neat. It's pretty different. So I would say, yeah, I think you'd enjoy what it does.
I might just pay to rent it on an Amazon Prime or just make a HBO Max. Cause there's a couple other things I want to watch. So I might just have to finally get my own HBO Max.
I share all that stuff too. Cause it's just, that's everybody's like, oh, we're going to stream everything. And then cable companies. Yeah. Right, dude. It's 10 times more money now. I have every single thing I want.
Yeah.
I'd rather just pay the cable company than have to pay like $15 for 20 things.
Yeah. If they have a DVR, you're good to go. Just record. If you can't watch two things,
that's it.
And boom.
Yeah.
Or if you're out you're playing a show or on tour, but
that's it. Yeah, so that, what else did I watch recently? That Golden Glove movie that you recommended.
Yeah. Did you like Jesus, that?
Holy shit. Like, man, well, like we were talking about, I didn't think they were going to make, like, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer type of movies again, like, where it feels like it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Like, what they're, and that kind of was like that. Like, I'm like, how did it looked like all the stuff that he was doing was actually happening to those people. It was really, really impressive.
There's a part where he like walks in and the girl does something that pisses him off and he like punches her in the face. I was like, dude, it looks like he fucking just really punched
dude it really and like when he would choke people, it was like it looked like they like really did it just to like get to the point, like, and they probably did a thing where like, you got to let us know when it's bad, because but it looks like they're choking them. Not horror, but horror adjacent, I would say, because of just the whole feeling of the movie. Did you watch The Iron Claw?
Yes, I actually watched it twice and cried my eyes out both times.
Dude, what a beautifully depressing, awful movie. Yes. Loved it. Like awful in a good way because of the subject matter.
Yeah.
So I loved wrestling like when I was in the 80s younger. So like I loved WWF, and then like from WWF, you know, the AWA stuff, I kind of understood. I knew Ric Flair. I knew like, cause they're like Legion of Doom kind of came out of that. And then they went to WWF. So like, I kind of saw some of that, like those people, but I like Andre the Giant's one of my favorite, just he as a person was awesome. But like just that whole thing, I love Andre. I loved the Hulk Hogan thing, Macho Man, all that stuff. Loved it. But I'm not like, for some reason, I don't really watch wrestling now.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just like it's a little too like soap opera kind of stuff now, and or it did do that now. It seems like it's getting back to like the kind of what I remember back how the 80s were. But so I knew the Von Erichs. I didn't know how devastating it was though. Like I knew that things happened and I knew how that family kind of like the tragedies it went through, but I didn't realize it was like that.
Yeah.
And then because I'm watching it, I'm like you said, like bawling, just like it's so depressing and so sad. So awesome though. And then like it's the real story is even worse than what the movie shows you.
Yeah. Cause there's a whole nother like, brother. And then,
yeah, there's like a whole other brother they don't talk about. They kind of talk about the youngest brother that died. But like, dude, like it's just tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And like, even I like read an interview with the director. He's like, yeah, we just, there was too much. We couldn't put that other brother death in. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, he was like, that would have been too much of another blow on the audience to have the fifth brother die. I was like, what the fuck?
But dude, the acting in it was superb. Zac Efron was awesome. What Jeremy Allen White was sick. I thought the only part of that movie that I was like, man, I really wish they would have got someone that had a little better voice was the Ric Flair guy.
Yes, Ric Flair was kind of hard to watch.
I mean, I kind of, because he did the one little walk thing, and I was like, okay, cool, that's there. But like when he talked, he didn't sound like Ric Flair. Ric Flair has like a pretty distinct, and I think you could have found an actor that did that. And you needed an actor that looked, he was like too pretty boy. Ric Flair's like fake pretty. He's like not an attractive guy, but he's sort of an attractive guy. Like, yeah. Like he makes himself attractive. So I was like, ah, the Ric like, Flair thing was a little.
That guy would have been fine if he just went in the ring and wrestled, but because he, yes. he like cut that promo into camera yep. for so long,
that's
like
it.
Such a part of the movie. It's like,
yep.
Yeah, you could have gotten better for that, dude. Like, yeah, he would have been fine as a just a wrestling double, but like, fuck
yeah, if you would have seen him, because I thought like they did the Thunderbirds cool. Like, I felt like, man, you saw like they looked like the fun, like it looked pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But I love the movie. I thought they did such a beautiful job with it. It was so, it really was like crushing, and like, but it needed to be. That's like what the story is. So.
Yeah. Now I found out, like, it was kind of the same with me growing up. I didn't know much about the story. And then I found out the whole story with Dark Side of the Ring doing an episode on them a little bit ago on Vice or whatever. And then, so I went and saw the movie in the theaters. And that first time I watched it, like, I got, you know, like, I did cry at the end and stuff like that. And I got, like, upset throughout, but not anywhere near as much as I watched it the second time. Cause when I was in theaters, there was these kids behind us that wouldn't shut up. They were taking pictures. So it was, like, distracting. But watching it that second time, man, just every time that, Kevin's just like, oh, I just want to be with my brothers, you know. It's just like you get a little tear in your eye, you're like, fuck, man. Like, like every time somebody asks him, it's like, oh, I just like having fun with my brothers, you know, like, or when they're at the party and they're all just enjoying watching him play music and like all the stuff, it's like, this is fuck. And then that scene where it shows them, spoiler alert for anybody that hasn't seen the movie, but so fast forward 30 seconds, but at the end when it shows all the brothers like in quote unquote heaven or whatever on the farm, it's and that shit was
such rough.
A touching moment. And I heard that I listened to an interview with Kevin and he said that was like probably like one of his favorite parts of the movie. That was the only part of the movie that they had to like stop it for a second form because he was just like really emotional because he felt like, you know, the spirit of his brothers in the movie.
Yep, that's what he would hope. I mean, that's like this, and like you were saying, the scene where he's like watching his two sons play and like, dude, oh my god, it just, man, it hits you everywhere emotionally.
He's
it's
like,
so
to,
good.
I used to be a brother, but I'm not anymore. Yep. Or whatever.
Yeah, like, we'll be your brother.
Shit,
it's so good.
Staying on the, like, well, not true crime, but true story, just, you know, aspect of it, and also kind of sad. I did watch what you recommended, the Dear Zachary letter for
dude,
son from your
father. You did go into that without learning anything about it, right?
Yeah, the only thing, I did read the synopsis on Tubi, but it did not give me, like, enough, like, it did not spoil anything. I was like,
yeah, because, dude,
like,
it is... Oh, the way that unfolds. And here's what's crazy. So, like, not that it, like, spoiler alert, whatever, but, like, so I live in Latrobe.
Yeah.
Okay. And the hospital that Andrew Bagby worked at is I'm 4 minutes away. The house that he was renting when he was working at Latrobe is right next to the hospital. So I see it like all the time.
Yeah. Some of those people might even be doctors in that hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. They might still be there. And then on the Legion Keener, no, not Legion Keener. I'm sorry. Where they found his body.
Yeah.
That, the hell is that place called? No, I can't think, but like, I've been there a bunch of times. There's like a big lake there. Everybody goes there. Like it's not far from me. Like, so I see like all the stuff about his life in that movie is, it's like right next to where I live.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So I was like, not only like I'm watching it and I forget who recommended it to me, and everybody that I've recommended it to, like, I'm going to fuck off. Never recommend movies again because that movie's so bad. So brutal. But, which that's what I love about it. But, I wasn't ready. Like, okay. I'm like, holy shit, this is, and then like, all the stuff that's like next to me, I'm like, after the movie, I'm like, I can't even leave because I'm crying, but I got to go drive next to the hospital.
Right. You got to go check out all the spots and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah. I remember pausing it because I had to pee or something. And I was like, oh, I got 30 minutes. I was like, how the fuck is there 30 minutes left? I was like, I feel like everything that's happened can happen. And then they like talk about her jumping off. And I was like, oh, what the fuck?
Oh, dude.
I was like, this isn't fair.
Yeah. The thing that's great, and I don't know. I think what makes that documentary so effective is that, and it wasn't even on purpose, but like how it happens in real time. So it's not like he's making a documentary after all that bad stuff.
Yeah.
All that bad stuff happens while he's making the documentary. So like, it's almost like a lightning in a bottle thing, like where you can't, how would you make a documentary that's that effective unless it's something that happens at the moment you're making it? Because he's making this movie about his best friend that he wants the son to watch, to know the dad.
Yeah.
And then all what happens and you're like, the parents, like,
yeah.
Oh my God, dude, you just like, I watch his mom and dad. Like all what they go through is just, it's almost too much.
I feel like the fucking police should have known that she should have never had custody after
100%
the conversations. Cause when she was in jail and talking to them, like, oh, well, like, you know, obviously she's a suspect in killing their son. And she's like, I want you to put a picture of us up in the house. It's like,
yeah,
that shit right there is psychotic to ask somebody when they think you killed their son. It's like that right there should have been enough for the, and it was recorded. So that,
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like that's so shitty.
Yeah. That whole, cause it's, they really didn't, when they extradited her, like the Canadian government and like whatever police departments here, like they weren't like really talking to each other. And that seems like that happened a lot back then. Like these police like they wouldn't like give information. So like their laws were a little different. She was able to do what she did because of the way that stuff. Yeah. That kind of stuff drives me crazy. There was, I watched something recently. It was the same type of thing where like, it's so obvious that they should have been able to not let this happen.
Yeah.
And then it happens because whatever, like negligence or like they just don't have the information from the one police department that they should have had. Like, dude, every serial killer of all time, like half of them, if the police would have just talked to each other, they probably would have been able to figure it out before they killed more people, you know? But yeah, it's nuts.
No, definitely. That's one thing that you hear a lot about, like in true crime stories, where it's like they could have stopped it, you know, 10 years sooner if they would have just communicated with this, you know, between these two police departments and stuff. There's that came out a couple years back called Unbelievable. It's like a limited series, one season, and it's got Toni Collette in it. It's got Caitlin Dever. It's got somebody else in it who's like a daughter.
Dude, I've wanted to see that. It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah,
is that the one that's on Netflix? Dude, I keep seeing it on there. I'm gonna watch that because I need something new to watch anyway. But yeah, I gotta watch that then. Cool.
And it's just one season, so you binge it and it's done, and you never have to go, you know, worry about when season two. You know what I mean? But hell yeah. Is there any other movies or anything you want to shout out before I let you go? Or did you have a topic or anything that you wanted to?
No. I love shooting the shit. That's like one of those little round tables I'll have to get on one of these days.
Fuck yeah.
It's just fun talking about horror movies because that's like, I feel bad too. Like Dan's kind of the same way with like, we love that whole thing. I love movies as much as I like playing music. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm the same way with like, I collect movies. Like there's so many that I just adore. And so, yeah, I love talking about the movie stuff and the horror stuff. Cause that's another thing too. Like I collect action figures, and the best action figures are always horror ones. And it's so awesome that you have companies now that are making sick ones. Like, dude, all those NECA cult classics originally, and now they have like what all the stuff that they do, man, there's just so much cool stuff if you're a horror fan. I love it.
Yeah. I just went and got this one out of storage that I've had from since I when I was a kid.
Oh, dude, I have all the Spawns. Yeah. I have, man, there's so much stuff in my basement. Oh God, there's just, but McFarlane used to be the king.
Yeah.
And then
Maniacs and stuff.
Oh, I still have most of my Movie Maniac series. I think I sold a couple because NECA made better versions. Like,
yeah.
And NECA was kind of crappy at first. Now, like, everything's crazy. Cause like,
they're the kings of it now, pretty much.
Dude, like the Evil Dead stuff, I'm a monster fan. Like, I have a signed Bruce Campbell book and all that stuff.
Fuck yeah.
And actually, I was on tour, like, this dude got me, it's amazing. He went to see Bruce Campbell and he got a really sick poster signed for me.
Awesome.
I have that in a poster or in a frame upstairs, but yeah, like I had the McFarlane Movie Maniacs had like an Ash from Army of Darkness and Evil Ash from Army of Darkness. They had the Pit Wench and Ash, like two pack that I bought. But dude, NECA put out like all those Evil Dead, like all the like Ash figures, like,
yeah.
And then they had the Henrietta figure. They never did a Pit Wench though, but they're just so much better. Like, so I got rid of some of that stuff and just like, I have a couple of the NECA ones now because they're so cool. And like, they did like the Evil Dead 1 Bruce Campbell that looks all 70s and it's awesome. And dude, I just love all that stuff. It kills me. I don't have enough money for any of it.
No, I feel that. I have all the, I started getting the little like Toonie Terrors or whatever ones.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
I got quite a few of those over there.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. Dude, that's not like I thought, oh, I'd have enough room in my house. I could display out. Nope. Yeah. Your room's getting used up. You have my daughter has her room. I have one like a recording room, and then my basement's not like finished. So if I had the money, I'd finish that and put all that stuff out. But
yeah,
it's a bummer. It's a bummer.
No, I'm the same. My walls are covered in art, and I have so much art that needs to be like framed that every time I go to cons, we keep telling ourselves we're not buying anything else unless it's to get signed. You know, like I met Sam Raimi. So of course I got like that.
Oh, that's awesome. Stuff. So,
we had to wait like 6 hours in line, but worth every second. Oh. He was a sweetheart and stuff. And every time he walked by, he was super like, it was almost like a kid walking with his lunchbox. He's like, hi guys, you know, just a super nice guy.
That's cool.
And for anybody listening, I did ask him if he's still working on the movie Magic. Who knows if any more info would be out by the time this releases, but he said he is still trying to do the remake of Magic. That would be the next film he wants to direct, but they're still like working on getting the rights. So they don't like,
wow.
I know that it was already announced that he's working on it like a year ago, but I guess it's been like a rights thing. Plus he produces so much, you know, but
yeah.
So. But no, hell yeah. No. But I like cut off, you know, art and toys are two things I was like, I'm not getting any more of. I was like, if I get a collectible, it's because I find one cheaper, like that I know is harder to find. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, this one's out of print. I'll snag that. Or a character they don't make a ton of. Like, if I found the Victor Crowley Tiny Terror or whatever, I'd snag that. Because I have, like, his NECA up here out of frame. But and it's, like, the only actual NECA figure I have. But that's just because they don't make that much Victor Crowley stuff. And I love
it. Yeah, I never see any of that stuff. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
But no, hell yeah. So I'm with you. I pretty much stick to just buying Blu-rays. And as you can see,
I know
I got the stack behind me and they're stacked on top. So like, I need to find more space for that. So I think a new Blu-ray shelf is in the future for sure. But
yeah,
man, I'll definitely hit you with the next few months kind of planned out as far as like topics for those monthly episodes. Cool. So I'll hit you with a few of them and see if any of them would vibe with like, you know, feel like a fun conversation for you. And if so, you could join us for sure.
I would love to do that. Those are so much fun. And yeah, we'll have to figure out a way to get Dan on one of these things because he'll go crazy with it.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I need to check and see. He might have even gave me his phone number back in the day or his email, because like I said, we did, I mean, he's been on the show before and it was so like we definitely have chatted before, but I just can't remember how we did it. So when I DM'd him, it was I don't think he never read it, so you know what I mean, it wasn't like he read it and ignored me or anything. Saw it. So
he does so much stuff with the kids now that he's like, his son does football and all these other different sports. His daughter does jiu-jitsu and all this stuff. So he's always kind of flying around when he's home.
Yeah. And like I said, he might've given me his phone. Sometimes I'll be looking through my phone for somebody like just to like in the family or something. And I'll be like, oh fuck, I forgot that person gave me their phone number to like hit him up for like whatever. So it might even be one of those things, but now awesome. Hell yeah, man, it was a blast chatting with you. And like I said, I'll let you know if I'm gonna head out to that show in Raleigh and stuff. And
please do.
We'll at least link up again, you know, via Zoom for another episode for sure.
Yeah, we'll do this. Awesome.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate you, man. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah. All right, you too, dude.
And as usual, I just want to say thanks again for listening, and make sure you check back next week, as I'll be joined by the one and only Tom Bienkowski of the band Flesh Creep. Now, of course, I'll also probably drop a Tiny Terror episode, but I'm not sure on what movie yet or anything like that. So just make sure you go follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and X for all updates on that, as well as any other updates with the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by sharing it around or rating and subscribing wherever you're listening. Or if you'd like to sign up for the Patreon, it is only $2 a month. The link for that is in the description. Thank you guys again so much for listening, and stay safe.